Okay, let's talk a little bit about esophageal cancer. Here's a question in terms of a case we got, Alan. A 61-year-old fit patient with adenocarcinoma of the esophagus and one liver lesion. Would you resect both the cancer in the esophagus and the liver or give neoadjuvant therapy?
So as we talked about, it's the exceptions that make the rule. And I would not upfront do something to a liver lesion. I would treat the patient for local management, which might still be chemo-rads, and then follow the disease. We have on occasion gone after isolated liver lesions if they truly are isolated a year or two down the road. In fact, I just had a young woman I did this in who had a year disease-free interval after we did that. So I never say never, but in general, I wouldn't do anything about the liver up front unless when I was doing surgery, it was right there in front of the surgeon. But in my view, you have to be really aggressive about the local disease because these patients, if you can't command local control, then the patients have just a miserable existence.
So Matt, we asked if you would comment on the New England Journal paper that came out this year looking at pre-op chemo radiation for esophageal cancer.
Sure. So the question of neoadjuvant chemoradiation esophageal cancer has been one that has probably been going on for decades. And just by way of example, our own experience, you could go to one big medical center in the city and get surgery up front previously, and you could then drive 20 minutes and you would get chemo radiation.
20 minutes, let's see.
20 minutes.
Is there a bridge?
So that was the situation. This study, I think, answers a question. It was 368 patients with esophageal cancer randomized to receive either preoperative treatment with carboplatin, paclitaxel, and radiation followed by surgery or surgery alone. The side effects for the preoperative treatment were as anticipated. The results were remarkable. So complete resection was achieved in 92% of those patients who received preoperative chemoradiation, as compared to only 69% of the patients who received surgery alone. Moreover, of those patients who received chemoradiation and were resected, 29% of those had pathologic CRs. So clearly something was happening with the preoperative chemoradiation. I think the real meat of the study, of course, is in the ultimate outcomes. And for the resected patients, looking first at disease-free survival with chemoradiation was actually not reached. Disease-free survival in those who had surgery alone was 24 months, so difference in disease-free survival. And finally, for overall survival, 49 months in those patients who received preoperative chemoradiation followed by surgery, and only 24 months in patients who received surgery alone. So a big study that I think pretty much answers the question. I guess the one thing I would perhaps even throw out to the group, if you look at some of the subsets, we have always tended to lump esophageal cancer with squamous cell and with the adenos. And the benefit really seemed to be much greater in the squamous cell than in the adeno. So you sort of wonder if this had been a pure adenocarcinoma study, would the effect size have been as large?
What about that question, Charlie?
It's a great point, and it was an issue when they presented it at ASCO. It obviously is a post hoc analysis at this point, but there has been studies to suggest that squamous cell do have a better response to neoadjuvant therapy as opposed to adenocarcinoma. Nonetheless, there are adenocarcinoma trials showing a benefit of neoadjuvant chemoradiation that were exclusively adenocarcinoma. So in face value, I think that the bottom line about this is that for a patient with adenocarcinoma, because we don't see many squamous cell at our center, for those patients with adeno, I would recommend carbotax radiation preoperatively.
Axel?
So Charlie, what about the radiation dose? Because, I mean, one of the intriguing issues here was they got away with a radiation dose of 41 gray. And in our center, we had discussions about whether this was actually the reason why adenocarcinomas didn't do as well, because we might need higher radiation dose. We actually, and it depends on the radiation oncologist who sees a patient, they might actually up the dose to 50.4 gray in adenocarcinomas and stay with 41 gray for the squamous cell cancers. I mean, we don't have any data right now from this study, but I mean, just throwing it out there, there's a difference in radiation dose compared to what we've done so far.
Well, the squamous cell carcinoma of the esophagus tend to be much more sensitive to radiation and chemotherapy.
That's why, you know, the adenocarcinomas might be under-treated with the radiation dose.
I fully agree with you. The point is that I fully agree with you that it could be the dose of the radiation because you have a much more sensitive group with the squamous and the adenos may not have been optimally treated. Yet you do see those, even with a less than optimal radiation dose, you still do see those responses.
I mean, it's actually a study that has influenced our standard of care.
Yeah, definitely.
I mean, we, for squamous, definitely, there's no question about this, because especially also these side effects are much more tolerable than what we've seen with 5-FU cisplatin therapy. And for adenocarcinomas, I think the question is still out there whether we can optimize the regimen, including higher dose of radiation therapy.
Any other issues, Rich, that come up in terms of esophageal cancer? Any questions that you get about it? Any myths or misperceptions?
Well, one of the questions has to do with people with proximal third of the esophagus tumors. And a lot of those are squamous cell carcinomas, and many of them are managed just with chemoradiation without resection because of the potential need for laryngectomy and other troubling effects of the necessary surgery. So, you know, I think that again points out the fact that you get a higher CR rate for these squamous cells and that that is a consideration in their management.
Tony?
So one point to emphasize, and that's the basis of the 80302 and the 80803 CLGB studies, is that in many of these, as in perhaps with the carboplatin-taxol radiation, the issue is less present, but with the prior use of cisplatin 5-FU radiation, there was a significant risk of mucositis, and 25%+ of the patients end up with a G-tube. In these instances, and the basis of the studies in CLGB, starting with chemotherapy prior to chemotherapy and radiation seems to drop the need for a feeding tube to less than 5%, which is what we've seen on those studies and in actual practice. So that's one thing, gave a message, you know, to the community practitioner about the importance of considering chemotherapy prior to chemotherapy and radiation. Now, again, it may become less relevant with the carboplatin-taxol radiation because you do end up with much lesser risk of mucositis and neutropenia.